Thanks for, obviously, I didn't remember that. Now that you mention it, I do remember that because I was so excited that we had our own little Abby Johnson here in North Texas in Ramona, and that a book was being written about her. So, all right, well, thank you for that local connection. So maybe I'm not breaking format as much as I thought.
You're not at all. I'm very endeared to Texas. Oh. I have a couple of aunts that live there, and good friends. So,
oh, super,
definitely.
Super. Well, you know, I'm very intrigued by this book. So tell us the origin of this, how you and Christina and Karen Ann came together and decided to write this book about Flannery O'Connor. How did it start?
Well, believe it or not, we didn't know each other before we wrote the book or before we took the trip. We were connected to the Catholic Press Association is what it was named at the time. We were freelancers that were part of an email list that had writers, Catholic writers from all over the country connecting to encourage and support one another. And this was quite a few years ago, and at some point, the name Flannery O'Connor emerged, and a lot of our fellow writers were very taken with this character. I've been sharing that I didn't know she was a woman. I thought Flannery O'Connor sounded like a guy.
Yeah, so. me too, yeah.
Oh, good, someone else said that the other day, too, so I'm not alone. But I was intrigued. You know, when someone that you trust gives you a movie review, you run out to go see that movie. I trusted the people that were talking about her. I was surprised, though, when I went to the library and got checked out her book, Wise Blood. It was her breakout novel. I was a young mom. I was a Catholic that was growing in my faith and really wanting to, you know, understand my faith better. Wise Blood maybe isn't the place to start if you're thinking you're going to get a feel-good, edifying Catholic book. It's rather jarring and confusing, unless you know the author first, I would say. And so it just pulled me in deeper and wanting to know a little bit more about her. I ended up getting the habit of being, I ordered a copy of her huge volume of letters. I know we haven't even really introduced Flannery yet, but this is how I got involved. And I started finding out who she was. I learned so much about the writing life, the Catholic imagination, and also about suffering through her letters. She died of lupus at 39 in 1964. One of the reasons a lot of people haven't heard about her is she slipped away quietly and really prematurely. She ended up contracting the disease of lupus, which her father had died of when she was about to turn 16. So it was a very tragic, it was a death sentence, basically. And so she really had this confinement. She had to move back from, she was in New York at the time, kind of starting to make those literary connections. She had gone to college in Iowa. She was really starting down a path of a flourishing wordsmith and making connections with publishers. And then this disease took hold. And in her 20s, she was called back home to Milledgeville, Georgia, which is the pre-Civil War capital of Georgia, which is something we really didn't know until we went on this journey. But two of these writers from our group ended up going on a literary pilgrimage, and the 50th anniversary of her death in 2014. So it's 11 years ago now that we started this journey, and only recently that our book was published. It's been a lesson in perseverance, but we went to go kind of meet the ghost of Flannery O'Connor to find out what's the mystique around this woman, this Catholic writer that is really kind of, you know, not always embraced even by Catholics, and yet She's really held up high in even some of the universities, although in recent years she's been canceled by some of the universities. I mean, she is a controversial character. She grew up Catholic in the Bible Belt in the 50s and 60s, and need I say more, right?
Yeah. So I think I appreciate that biography and what you've told us about her. And I do think that, and I admit that I've never read any of her writing, but I think there's almost this confusion because I don't know how to categorize her. And, you know, is she somebody worthy of reading? Are we going to be edified in our faith? And so if I may ask another biographical question, you mentioned Iowa, you mentioned Millsville, Georgia. So was she born in Iowa and then moved down to the South? Was she a cradle Catholic? Anything about her spiritual upbringing?
Yeah. She was born in Savannah, Georgia. That's where her Irish Catholic family lived. Her mom was a little bit, she came from more of a family of wealthy means, They ended up moving to Milledgeville. They did have relatives there. I can't remember exactly what prompted them to go there. I think it had something to do with her father's job. And she lived a fairly coveted life. She was the only child of this Irish Catholic couple. The church in Milledgeville, Georgia, Sacred Heart Church, was basically built by her family, brick by brick. So when you go there today, you can see a little homage at the back of the church that's paid to her. Although even some of the locals in Milledgeville, some of the local Catholics, aren't sure what to make of Flannery. Again, she's really someone you need to get to know through her letters, or we hope now through our book, Finding Flannery. We wanted this book to be a bridge for people that maybe even know her but don't know a lot about her, or people that love her already and maybe want to get to know her in a different way through three voices of three ordinary Catholic women writers who are living in the modern world and reflecting back on what can she teach us? What is it about her? I would say, Dave, in answer to your question of what she was or who she was an artist, first and foremost. Actually, she was a visual artist. She started doing little cartoons and things like that. She had a lot of time in her childhood to while away the hours as an only child, as an introvert in her bedroom, creating little characters, writing little stories. And eventually these became expanded into her fiction. That's what she's mainly known for. She has two novels that she wrote and then the rest, 30-some short stories. They're captivating. They make you squirm when you read them because she has such a handle on human nature and not always the bright side of human nature, because there's another side, right? The side that is, you know, predestined to want to sin. Mm. And so a lot of her stories are really about a world without grace. And how do we, you know, what does that look like? It's really to make us want to run the other direction and run to Christ. Yeah. That was her purpose. Mm-hmm.
And I presume she never married, never had kids, right? She died so young. So she remained single, alone her life?
She did. But, you know, there were a couple of suitors and a couple of possibilities. I do want to go back now because I remembered you asked about. So she was born in Savannah. They moved to Milledgeville. She went to college in Iowa. It was a prolific, you know, literary community, which it still is. And then over to Yaddo in New York, she met some different significant people that were key people to her getting published. And it was Sally Fitzgerald and her husband. Anyway, she kind of was making it. She was finally finding those connections, making it in the world, becoming known with her breakout novel when she was called home. But the thing is, if without her having been called back to the dairy farm, which her mother, Regina, you know, once born of wealth, now working a dairy farm with farm help, that was what kind of like God called her into this confinement, like I said. And we were able to visit those places, her church, the farm where she grew up, where she wrote these beautiful stories, really. I mean, they are really beautiful if you understand what she's trying to get at, which is, again, why it's helpful to have some background information on Flannery before you dive in.
Yeah, you know, I want to bring in something personal to me. I've spent the last 15 years studying and teaching St. Thomas Aquinas, who even Pope St. John Paul II said, you know, had a really, really great understanding of the human person. My understanding is that Flannery O'Connor, you know, referred to herself as a hillbilly Thomist, or at least that name was tagged on to her. She, I think, was a devotee of St. Thomas Aquinas. And so I'm kind of putting these two together, and from what you've said is that she does have a really good understanding of the human person, perhaps based on her own study of maybe not only Aquinas but some of the great church fathers who came before her. Would you say that she was a woman who had studied her faith a lot?
Absolutely. Not only did she study it, so in that way she was a thinker, and I would say I'm a thinker too. Like, thoughts are very important as a writer. But also, she was a daily mass goer. She went with her mother every morning to daily mass and looked upon the cross. And so you have this person who was a thinker and was really brilliant. She really was a genius, I would say. But she also had a good heart. She had a lot of humor. So when you read her letters, I found myself laughing out loud quite often, even on the plane ride over to Kentucky, where the three of us initially met. Before we journeyed together in a car down to Milledgeville, we were still cracking up along the way. She was serious. She was funny. She was lighthearted. She did not take herself very seriously. She was She was, no, you're right. She, despite having a couple of suitors, I think the disease of lupus just really made it difficult for her to flourish in that way. So she really focused on her friendships, the people she met when she was called out of her writing hole to go and speak. She didn't relish the thought initially of going to this university or that as her writing was become more well-known. What she relished was the friendships she made along the way, and she was a prolific letter writer also. That's one of the things when I'm reading her 600-page volume of letters, which, again, you can take day by day. You don't have to read them all at once. I didn't. But you get to know her. It's by the end of it, it's like you've made a friend.
Yeah.
A Catholic friend, a thoughtful Catholic friend who not only read, like you said, Thomas Aquinas, but she was concerned about the issues of the day, like contraception, or, you know, she would discuss the Eucharist. We all know the quote that Jonathan Rumi made famous at the Eucharistic revival a couple of years ago. Talking about the Eucharist, if it's a symbol, to hell with it. That was her quote.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like she was not being brash. She was being real, because truly, if it is just a symbol, what are we doing?
Yeah.
We're worshiping a piece of bread, right?
Exactly. I remember that. He had that on his shirt. And like you said, he did make it famous. The book is called Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left us all. And I'll tell you, 10 minutes into the conversation, I want this to be on my Christmas list. I mean, seriously, I'm so intrigued by this woman. But I do think she's a bit of an enigma. You talk about her beautiful stories, but also described as having grotesque violence. You use the word jarring, makes mm-hmm. you squirm, that she was canceled. So I'm trying to piece all this together, and it seems fascinatingly complex, her writing. Would that be a good way of describing it?
Absolutely. And Dave, you just touched on something. Humans are also what you just described.
Yeah.
We're messy. We are very messy. And it is a mystery, because, she didn't have this life where she was out, entertaining. Like, she wasn't in the world we're in today. She wasn't confronting some of these characters. But you know what? In all ages, we have this messiness. In all ages, we have a propensity to sin. In all ages, We have confusion, and we also have beauty. And so she brought all these things together in a way that I don't think anyone else has. It's really hard to describe her stories without just diving in at some point. But again, with caution, she is a controversial figure. One of the things that, as far as the controversy goes, she did write about, black people at the time. And at the time in the South, in the 50s and 60s, they were not always, looked upon how we hope to look upon them today.
Yeah.
And when I say them, our fellow human beings. But a lot of people would take some of her quotes, and that's why she got canceled at a couple of universities a couple of years ago. They didn't look into what she was actually trying to do, which was she was like a reporter in that sense, describing the world as she knew it at that time.
Yeah.
However, if you read some of her stories, she actually wants to uplift the downtrodden. She actually is doing the opposite of what people have given her a chance to actually let it, let the true message flow out. But she really had a heart, actually, for the downtrodden. And you'll see that she, in essence, was really lifting up those communities that were not being held up high. And she loved, the farm help that lived on her property. They were great friends. She speaks of them admiringly, and yes, sometimes with a little bit of humor and jabbing. But at the same time, it's real. It's real life, and that's what she lived. That's what she described. And she's a fascinating character, and really someone I think everyone should get to know.
Yeah, it reminds me of the controversy with Mark Twain, who I guess would be a similar situation, where some of the language in his famous books, people have canceled him, but it was the time that he lived, in that part of the country as well. My guest is Roxanne Salonen, and she, along with two other writers, Karen Ann Mahoney and Christina Brakovich, have written a fascinating book that I find very interesting, Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left us all. And Roxanne, you mentioned two novels, and I think you said 30 short stories or a lot of short stories. Where, if somebody, reads your book first, where do you recommend, if they're going to go into the primary source and read some actual Flannery O'Connor, where would you suggest they start?
Again, I would start with the letters, because in the letters she talks about her stories. She talks about what it was like to get that first book published. There's another collection of her writing. There's several collections of her writings. I'm looking at them right now. One of the volumes that I read when I decided, okay, now that I got to know her through her writings, I'm going to go to her short stories and I'm going to give it a try. And I had a whole summer of just reading these. But Flannery O'Connor, The Complete Stories, has all of her little short stories in there, and they're just interesting, really, to read, especially once you get to know her. One of her most famous, there's a collection called A Good Man is Hard to Find. Dave, I would also suggest people go online and click and actually Google or whatever search engine you're using, A Good Man is Hard to Find. There's actually a recording of her voicing that. She was at a university somewhere, and they made it available. And so you can get to hear her inflections and her southern drawl and get to know, like, a little bit of, like, what she sounded like, which is really interesting since it was so long ago. But there's, yeah, all these different collections where you can, you know, kind of just sit down and get to know Flannery and get to know her characters. There's also the movie that came out a couple years ago called Wildcat that Ethan Hawke produced, and his daughter Maya was Flannery. That again, that might be a fun introduction, but you might still have a lot of questions after watching it, as I did. My husband and I and our son, one of our sons, watched it, and I grasped it better than they did because I'd read the actual stories. but it is a creative rendering of her work.
Would you recommend, you know, buying this for a middle schooler or a high school child, or is the content too much for that age?
I would say so. You know, I'm a children's book author too. I don't do my own illustrations, but I have a heart. My mom was a elementary teacher. My dad was an English teacher. So I have that in me. And we kind of had fun with this book. I wanted to mention this. We have a travel album in the middle of the book. It's in color, of our journey. And so that's a really fun, we just got a note from someone this morning who really loved that part of it, because not only are we telling about the journey, but you can see the pictures of Flannery's home, her crutches, her peacocks. She was a huge fan, and that was one of the things she did. She nurtured her peacocks, and there was a lot of birds. So in the book, we each take a different bird as our character. And again, we did it in color. So I feel like it did kind of feel almost like a you know, young adult children's book kind of a feel. I don't think there's anything in there to detract from that. I absolutely think that high school and probably middle school as well would do just fine with it.
Yeah, wow, fascinating. The book is called Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left us all. I do think she is a very mysterious writer, and obviously I can sense the excitement that you have about her, Roxanne, as well. We only have a couple of minutes remaining. I definitely want to let people know, where can they go to purchase this? What's the best place? Obviously, you can go to Amazon, but is there a more direct place? What would you recommend?
Yeah. So a small Catholic publisher called En Route Books and Media was the one that finally decided to take on 3 different authors, which isn't an easy task, but we were grateful for that. And so you can go to En Route. Actually, if you just type in your search engine, Finding Flannery, En Route Books and Media should pop up, and there's options there. And there's also some testimonials, a little bit about ourselves and some different interviews and things like that we're collecting on that page. So that would be a great place to go. And also, hopefully, eventually, or if not sooner, your favorite Catholic bookstore will be having these as well, or you can request them there.
Yeah,
we're really excited to get the word out and just to let more people know about her and not be afraid of Flannery, because I know some people have kind of dipped in and went, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So hopefully this book can be a little bit of an introduction that will be a softer easing into Flannery, and I think you won't regret it.
You mentioned Wise Blood, if I got that name right, and then you also mentioned The Habit of Being. Are those her 2 novels?
Yes. Habit of Being is her collection of letters. And again, it's huge, but don't be daunted by it. It took me a long time to get through, but I absolutely just loved it. As a Catholic journalist as I am in this world, truth is not always well received. And Flannery knew that, and she pushed through that in a way that really inspired me to keep going. So I really owe a lot to her in that way of just speaking the truth boldly, like that quote that we just said about the Eucharist. She also said something along the lines of, a lot of people think religion is an electric blanket when, of course, it is the cross.
Mm.
She had a handle of the cross, but also the joy of life. She did not complain, even though she was heading towards her death. I find that very inspiring and grace-filled.
Yeah. Finally, how do three people write a book? What's the format, and how did y'all have different chapters, or what? How did y'all share the writing?
We were at the end of our journey in a monastery, in a Trappist monastery, during grand silence when we got the giggles and started thinking about, do we want to take all of our thoughts? Because we were bloggers at the time, and every night we would, you know, gather our thoughts and share them. We wondered, maybe this is something we can share with others. And so it took 11 years to get to the point of publication. But in that time, we let things simmer, and we really let the trip inform us, and we melded it into our life even more. So it went from being just a travelogue to a travel memoir. And we, again, mentioned earlier, we had each, were represented by a bird. I'm the cardinal. I'm the red cardinal in the book. And so that's where you'll find my voice. And then we just kind of each took a portion of each chapter that we decided together we wanted to share about, and we would each write separately and share our writings. And it was quite a process, but very meaningful too. And we each come from different generations. We have a millennial, and we have, I'm a Gen X, and then our older counterpart is a boomer. So we have three different perspectives.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool. Well, Roxanne, we're out of time. Thank you so much. I want to recommend this book to everybody, Finding Flannery, a travel memoir exploring the mystique of Flannery O'Connor and the legacy she has left all of us. Really appreciate your time, Roxanne. I'm very intrigued, and I'm excited to read the book myself. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you for yours as well, David. It's nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you. This is the Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network, and thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your weekend. God bless you.
At Whole Life Authentic Care, they believe people are searching for something more in their health care, their work, and their purpose. Rooted in faith, they care for women and families through a holistic, life-affirming approach that honors the dignity of every human person. As an apostolate of the Diocese of Fort Worth, the mission continues through those who feel called. Whether you're called to give or called to serve in healthcare, they invite you to be part of something more. Visit wholelifeac.com for information.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me on the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network, 9:10 a.m. on the east side of town and 11:40 a.m. on the west, and also our little 101.5 FM in Cleburne, Texas. We're glad that you're with us. This is really one of my favorite parts of my job, because I get to meet really interesting people who are doing good things to help build up the body of Christ here locally in North Texas. And today is certainly no exception. I'm going to share some pretty exciting news. You likely are familiar with the Legatus Group, which has to do with Catholic CEOs who want to incorporate their faith into their leadership in business. And there's been a couple of chapters of Legatus here in North Texas, and they have recently formed a new one, which is called the North Dallas Legatus Chapter. And they have already started to meet, and I have as my guest Greg Deiter, who is a Legatus member. I'll give you more information about him in just a moment, but I do want to thank Cecil Anderson for running the board for me. And Cecil has a brand new title, and it is Mission Support and Design Creator for Future. Okay, if not, for future reference, that's not part of her title. She's just telling me that. So she's running the board for this. And so let me tell a little bit more about Greg Deiter. And he has a really fascinating story. And welcome, by the way. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Dave.
I always think the Legatus members must just be so busy and you know, successful that they have no time for little interviews like this, but you're retired, so you've got...
I am retired, yeah. But I think in retirement, you find out that you say yes too often, so you get kind of busy as well.
A lot of times people are busier in retirement, aren't they?
It seems like it, yeah.
Well, let me let our listeners know a little bit about you, Greg. Greg Deiter is a Legatus member with the Developing North Dallas Chapter. Greg retired from the Boeing Company after a 34-year career that spanned military aircraft, space exploration, homeland security, cybersecurity. Boy, that'd be an interview in and of itself there. He served as a vice president of Boeing's defense and government services business, vice president of cybersecurity, director of strategy and business integration for Boeing China. He currently is on the board of Catholic Charities of Dallas and Mother Teresa Catholic School. He also enjoys volunteering at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church in Frisco, and where he's a member of the Men's Ministry, Parish Council, Stewardship Committee, Eucharistic Ministry, Acts Team. Wow.
Yeah.
Greg.
I told you I was busy.
Yeah. And also the North Texas Catholic Brothers for Christ as well. He's married, most importantly, married to Tanya Scheer Dieter for 35 years. They have two adult children, Heather and Derek. And Greg received a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from Kansas State University and a master's from the University of Washington. And he has served on the board of advisors for Kansas State University and Collin College.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm worn out.
Well, thanks for the introduction. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So what got you involved with Legatus? And is this new for you? And tell us a little bit about what's going on.
It's new for me. Yeah. I mean, Dave, when I retired, I decided that I wanted to stay busy. I wanted to stay connected. But I wanted to take the time that I didn't use for work to kind of further my Catholic faith. So I started, you know, joining some men's groups, trying to get myself kind of more educated on the Bible, more on our faith and such. So that was my post-work life that I did that. During my work life, I tried to do as much as I could, but on the road so much, it was basically a Sunday commitment, maybe on parish council, member of the Knights, those type of things. But post-retirement, I really just tried to get deeper into my faith. And as I started to run around and talk to people, you know, the name Legatus came up several different times. People that I would talk to, they say, "Are you a member of Legatus?" And I didn't even know what it was. So I had to look it up, found it to be a very interesting organization. And I saw what the value was, but I really didn't even think about joining until I got contacted that said we were starting another chapter to try to connect the parishes in North Texas, right near where I live, Frisco, McKinney, Plano, Allen, those different places as such. So got engaged at that time and have really enjoyed it so far.
Well, you know, I was very well, they prepared me very well, Legatus did, for this interview and even, you know, questions, and it made it very easy on me. But they did send a little paragraph about Legatus, so I'll read that, and then you can fill in some of the blanks about what it is. I said briefly a little bit about it, but Legatus is an international organization of lay executives whose mission is to study, live, and spread the Catholic faith in our business, professional, and personal lives. We are comprised of a growing network of CEOs, presidents, managing partners, and founders who aspire to be faithful ambassadors for Christ and lead as many other souls to heaven as possible. The name Tom Monahan is synonymous with Legatus because he founded it. He's the guy that started Domino's Pizza. He used to own the Detroit Tigers. I actually interviewed him one time.
Did you
about
really?
Legatus.
Yeah, he's a very nice man. I met him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I remember he told me that it was the of all the things that he did, I mean, he started a city.
Yeah.
He started a university.
A university,
law school. I mean, Ave Maria, Florida. I mean,
financial investment company as well too for Catholics as well.
Yeah, Ave Maria,
usual funds.
Yeah, there's so much.
Yeah, so much.
And so, but anyways, he told me one time that this was what he was the proudest of is Legatus. And so, it was an honor to meet him. But this is. I hate to use the word elite because it makes it sound very exclusive.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that either, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So who can be a member of Legatus?
Well, you know, so, and I think anybody can, but what they're trying to do, and I think, you know, growing up, you get a lot of opportunities like being with just the Knights, but that really is localized to your typical council and stuff like that. If you get involved at the state level or the national level, you might get a bigger and broader reach. But I think what Tom was trying to do in 1987, and I don't want to speak for him, but he realized that one of the challenges of running businesses where you have a lot of diversity is to try to share your Catholic message, and it's very difficult at times. I mean, at the Boeing Company, I had the opportunity to have a lot of conversations with people about values and virtues and that type of stuff, which was kind of foundational to my Catholic faith. But not being able to step over the edge talking about my Catholic faith to community was kind of difficult sometimes. And I wish I'd been around some Legatus leaders, because since that time, and I've listened to several Catholic leaders now talk at our monthly meetings, about how they were really more bold in proclaiming their Catholic faith in the workplace, but not crossing the line.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to me. And I think what Tom tried to do was he felt when he was running Domino's that you get really deep into just running the business. Of course, then once he sold it, then it was like, okay, what can I do for the church and the faith? And he started these two organizations. But he realized that having a mentor, a partner, a friend, somebody you could call up and ask questions about, saying, I'm having this difficult conversation, you know, how did you handle it? I think it's important. And it's just a different demographic. To your point, you were saying he focused on like CEOs, presidents. I was a vice president at the Boeing company. That's not, title is not important. It's responsibility and reach.
Yeah.
So I had like 4,000 employees on my last major jobs. And the ability to go around and talk to them and have conversations and be in the communities that we served. I think he was trying to make sure that Catholic leaders wouldn't just cower back in bringing our faith, not only to the business experiences, but also our reach into the communities as well, too, making sure that everybody knew not only is Tom Monahan the head of Domino's Pizza and the owner of the Detroit Tigers, but he's Catholic.
Yeah.
He cares about people. He's engaged in his community and he gives back.
Yeah. And I think about it. Yeah, I think you said 4,000 people were working for you as when you were VP of Boeing, and tremendous responsibility. I mean, 4,000 people are waking up in the morning and getting going off to work. And to some degree, you know, they are working for you and you can influence a lot of people positively or negatively. And I guess that's what maybe Tom was intending, is that you might as well have these people at the top who are grounded in their faith because of the responsibility they have in a lot of other lives.
You know, even at the Boeing company, I could probably go back and look at the leaders that influenced me, and I know that they were all strong in their faith. They might not have been Catholic, but they brought their faith to their workplace. And foundationally, just, you know, said, okay, you know, that takes you through highs and lows, right? You know, if you have Christ in your life, you don't necessarily dwell on the lows. You know, there's a better time coming. You don't get too proud when it comes to your highs as well, too. You try to hold the humility that Christ held. And I think that's kind of what Tom's trying to get us to do. You could either just give that information to people, or you could connect them and put them in, you know, a place where they meet monthly. We have the ability to meet on a daily basis as well, too. So he's created, you know, applications and tools where we can get in chat rooms and ask questions. There's forums you can be a part of specifically to, I think, coach and mentor younger people. So like in our chapter, there's folks that are older than me and there's folks that are younger than me inside there as well. So to share that knowledge and that experience, and when I look upward, I look at the wisdom that's there as well, too, to help me understand how to be a better retiree and a volunteer at church or a board member in a Catholic organization.
Yeah, it's, you know, I read the bio and you were involved in a lot of things. And I would think, like, how could he even carve out any time to be involved in another group? But so why is this important? Why do you make time for this?
Well, like I said, when I retired, I got into the position of like local Bible studies and support in my parish. And then I wanted to go a little bit beyond there. And I got asked to help with one of the North Texas Catholic Brothers for Christ conferences. They were going to hold it at our parish. So I joined the team and I helped them kind of organize that. But what I was finding out, it was just involving me. And I'm retired now, and I spent 34 years at the Boeing company, and my wife probably took the brunt of me being gone and doing stuff. I wanted to find something that we could do together. So Legatus affords us the opportunity to do kind of what I was doing with Catholic Brothers for Christ. I was able to meet parishioners and Catholics and, you know, from other areas. Now on Legatus, I can meet Catholic couples that my wife and I can do things with and share times with. So now my wife's finding, you know, spouse friends like I found friends, and we're getting this connection. So now we have friends from Our Lady of Angels, St. Jude's, Prince of Peace, not just Frisco, you know. So it gives us the ability to see a broader reach just in North Texas. And then we're engaged with people from our region and then international as well, too. So there's opportunities to meet Catholics other places. So we spend some time in Colorado. We have the ability to join the Legatus group on their monthly meetings out there and meet a new set of couples. In fact, our speaker next week is a part of the Colorado Springs Legatus chapter. So he's coming to come speak to us next week. So that connection was important for me.
So what's a typical meeting like? You have a speaker. Is there mass?
We start with rosary. So we're meeting next Wednesday. We always meet middle of Wednesday of the month. So we start with rosary. My wife and I are going to lead at this next mass. It's going to be at Prince of Peace. So we meet there, and then Father does a mass for us very specifically with the Legatus group. And then we usually find a restaurant somewhere, and we have a social hour, so you have the ability to talk to other people and get to know them. The other good news is they do a good job of making sure you sit at different tables every week, not just with people you know, so that they purposely try to get us to sit with other couples. And then we have a dinner. And after the dinner, we have a featured speaker, and those featured speakers, I mean, I've only been to now 5 sessions, but have been amazing. I mean, men and women that came in to talk about how, you know, they started businesses and how they use Catholic values to start their business. We had a young priest from Minnesota come in from, he grew up in North Dakota, but he's from Minnesota now. He came down to talk to us about his conversion story, basically how he came to the faith and how he became a priest. All these stories are just, you learn so much. So the meeting usually lasts, 6:15 starts the rosary. We're done by 9. So it's about 3 hours a month at the most commitment time. But in that period, you get to talk to 40 other Catholics from around North Texas. So it's great.
And, North Dallas and Collin County, and there's a lot of Catholics there. So how are you getting the word out about this? How are people finding out? Well, I think you're doing the radio interview. So
I think that's one of the things that's going to help quite a bit. It's a brand new chapter. So I think how it started was Legatus reached out to the pastors at a couple of parishes and said, hey, do you have any business leaders that would be interested in Legatus? And then they contacted us and had the first session. So I think what we should do to the people listening today is, if you have any interest, if you feel like you would benefit from, I think, connectivity with other Catholic business leaders, so you, like you said earlier, you could connect your faith, your family, and your business experiences into one and learn from others. Probably the best way to do is to reach out to legatus.org. That's their website. And from there, you can drill down to the one that's closest to you, because I know we have a broad audience here. So those that are in, Parker County could join the Fort Worth chapter. There's the Dallas chapter that people probably south here could do. And then, of course, the North Dallas chapter, that's probably the best thing to do is to... Going online, you can learn more about whether you think this is right for you or not. The resources that you'll see that they offer, they have medical benefits, they have travel benefits, they have annual conferences and events that you can attend as well, too. So there's just more than what we've even talked about that's beneficial to people who might be interested in joining the group.
I know there's a question that many people have is like, well, that sounds really interesting, but I don't know if I qualify. Yeah. There's almost like this. I don't want to find out that I remember years ago, somebody said, Dave, you qualify for Legatus. You're the general manager of the Catholic radio. And I said, I don't think I do. And it turned out I didn't, but that's okay. I mean, I get to weasel my way into meetings anyways, through Catholic radio. So I've been to a lot of Legatus meetings, but I'm not an official member. So what would somebody, if they are curious, do I even qualify for this?
Yeah.
How would they find out?
Well, to your point, I think that, the number one requirement is you must be Catholic, a practicing Catholic. And of course, that's what they wanted to start this thing off. And if you are or not, and I'm sure if you don't, you can ask your parish priest and he'll tell you whether you are or not. But title-wise, I don't think titles as important as the broad reach, right?
Yeah.
So one of the minimum requirements are, as they said, that if you manage, and these are not all-inclusive, they're one of these requirements. But if you manage 40 employees with a total payroll of like $1.5 million, you qualify. If you run a business unit that does $10 million a year in revenues, you qualify. And if you work for financial services business and you've got $2 million in commissional revenue a year that you spread amongst your organization, you qualify as well, too. I think the best thing to do is just inquire. You fill out an application. They do an assessment. In our group, we have people that have owned businesses worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and we've got people that are running businesses that are like car wash businesses and stuff, but they have enough employees and enough reach.
And so, in your case, you're retired, so yeah. you may not have those people still working for you.
Yeah.
But it gets kind of retroactive.
It is.
What have you done
in your life? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they also, they know once we retire from positions like that, we want to give back. I think Tom Monahan is a great example, right? A man who sold his business and then immediately wanted to do something for the church. Started mm-hmm. Legatus in 87 when he was still owner of the Detroit Tigers and pizza, Domino's Pizza. But since then, his outreach has been amazing. So,
yeah, my guest is Greg Deiter. He is a Legatus member with the Developing North Dallas chapter. And as Greg mentioned, there are other chapters. If you're interested in it, legatus.org is the website. And the big news is that the North Dallas Legatus chapter says it's in development, but you guys are going. I mean, you've had meetings. You've got a meeting next week.
Yeah, we anticipate that. It's Tom Monahan always likes to come around, and when they charter a new group.
Has he been around yet?
He'll be around. We're hoping February we'll have the number of members that we need in order to charter. So within a year, within 10 months, we'll be chartered, we think.
And are you the one that books the speakers? Is that
responsibility going forward. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I thought, when he asked me whether I wanted to do this or not, I says, well, I know a few speakers, but I'm going to run out of speakers in 3 years or something like that. No, there's an entire network of speakers that Legatus has, and they basically, I wouldn't say they do a circuit, but you get a list of people that have gone to, like, I'll just say the Houston chapter, the Austin chapter, the chapter in Kansas City or St. Louis or whatever, or Colorado Springs or Denver. You find people that have been, they'll say this was a well-received person. You ought to contact them. So my job will be to contact that speaker and find a nice mm-hmm. slot for them to come in and fix. And you'll be on my list, Dave, if somebody come in and talk to us.
Oh,
sometime.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's awesome. And so, if somebody is interested in joining, they just go to that website.
That's the best place to get started. Yeah, and then from there, what you'll do, it'll then direct you towards find the chapter closest to where you are, and then it'll allow you to outreach that way. I don't know. Another way to do it would be to contact myself if they want to do that, and I can direct them in the right place if they want to do that.
Yeah, and what was when you were working at Boeing, and I know you said you were a lot of traveling. Did you find it challenging to incorporate your faith into your job? Because obviously, it can't always be really overt. I mean, in my job, it could be overt because we're in Catholic radio. But when you're working for a big corporation like that, what was the challenge of being in a leadership position, being Catholic, but going around proselytizing or what was it like to live out your faith?
It didn't change my values and how I treated people and how I operated and how I managed and how I led. That didn't change that, but it changed the tone that I could have at work and how I could talk and statements I could make as well too. Back in the day, I remember getting in trouble with our HR department a couple of times about talking too broadly about my faith or things like that, where somebody was offended and they come back and said, you really can't, mention the fact that you're Catholic, because then people will think, well, he's not going to pay attention to me unless I'm Catholic mm-hmm. as well, too. So you try to avoid those things. And these are conversations I've had with younger people, because they've asked me that same question. How do you deal with that? And I said, you just stick true to what drives you. And in your business, it depends whether you're a publicly traded business or a privately owned business, how much you can say. And so I think that's the challenge. And of course, trying to solve that problem on your own is difficult. But if you're a young manager or a young leader right now going through that trouble, there's just a local chapter can help that. But there's forums and chat rooms that you can ask these questions. And other members from across the nation can jump in and give you their experiences, their feedback, and their approach that they took. So I think that, to me, would be one of the big reasons to join Legatus if you're a current business runner, leader, owner, would be, I'm struggling with how do I bring my faith to the business mm-hmm. and to the community. these folks can help quite a bit just by asking the question.
You know, you talk about Tom Monahan wanting to give back, and it sounds like that's your story as well. As I listed all those groups you're involved in, I mean, pretty much everything you're doing is faith-based, isn't it? I mean, you are deeply entrenched in giving back to the local Catholic Church.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I tell my wife and I tell my God the same thing. When I was working in business, I was really just focused on being a provider, making sure I did the best so I could raise my family and provide for them. Then when I got closer to retirement, I realized I sacrificed a lot of opportunities, and I didn't want that to go to waste when I retired. So before I retired, I started moving towards volunteering to the church. And then since retirement, it's been probably the most, I think, rewarding thing in my life. And Tom will tell you the same thing, that he probably running the pizza company and running the baseball team was fun. He had a good time at it, but this is rewarding because you know you're bringing people to the faith. You're trying to help people that struggle with their faith. You're using your financial, your time, your talent to help organizations that are trying to evangelize in Jesus Christ. So I think that, to me, has been part of the reason why I enjoyed what I've done and why I joined Legatus, is I want to be around those like-minded people.
Yeah.
And I really want to be around couples that think that way as well, too, so I can bring my wife into that community, and not just, you know, a male-based community, but a couple-based community.
Yeah, and I guess that's also important to say, is that this isn't just a male group. I mean, no. If a lady is a...
Well, our president of our chapter is a very successful business leader.
Yeah, right? And spouses.
And her spouse was a successful business leader. We have very strong leaders, both female and male, in our organization. So, and I think we appreciate that behind every successful business leader is a successful spouse as well, too, whether it be male or female.
Yeah. Well, Greg Deiter, thank you very much. Legatus member of the Developing North Dallas chapter. And I really appreciate Legatus reaching out to me to do this interview. It's great to see you. I mean, I know we have been connected kind of informally through the North Texas, the Catholic Brothers for Christ. And I love St. Francis Parish and Father Rudy, and did a broadcast out there recently.
I remember I was there.
The Gubbios.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you for loving our parish. We love you up there as well, too, Dave.
Thanks for all you do. And our station, the City of License, is Frisco. So I often say, hey, this is our parish.
I hear it every morning.
Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth. So, Greg Deiter, thank you very much. God bless you. And thanks for all you do to give back to the Catholic community, because I already listed all the things you're doing, and then to add one more to Legatus and to give back in that way, we really appreciate it so much. And please pray for Legatus members, because these are the leaders in our community, and like I mentioned before, they have a lot of responsibility, and they need our prayer support as well. So that is going to do it. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and if you have suggestions for a future interview of the week, you can contact me directly, DavePalmer@grnonline.com, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. And the website to learn about Legatus, if you're just curious, or if you think you would like to get involved in the North Dallas chapter or any of the other chapters around town, legatus.org, LEGATUS.org. It's a Latin word. It means something. I'd look that up. Legatus.org is the website. Greg, thanks again.
Thank you, Dave.
And thanks again to Sissel. God bless you, and thanks everybody for listening today.
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM, Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Catholic radio for your soul in North Texas. Heard also on grnonline.com and on your smartphone.
From that very first moment, he was elevated to the office of